You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, Colt Molesky here, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out some of that content on the Locked On Wolves FanRag website, where you can also read Adam King's articles. If you're looking for something that's written as opposed to something on audio, he has articles posted there as well. Go on Twitter, check out at C Molesky, M-O-L-E-S-K-Y, for podcasts. I post them all there, as well as articles that I've written, all that kind of stuff. Make sure to check out that content as well. Today, looking at the Cavaliers after that crazy game-winning shot on Saturday from LeBron James, taking the 3-0 lead on Toronto. Going to take a close look at the Cavaliers and the Toronto series, and then how LeBron could look at the Boston Celtics if they are able to wrap up that series tonight. Here joining me, he is the managing editor of Fear the Sword on the SB Nation website dedicated to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He runs that site and manages the site. He's also the host of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Chris Manning, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, happy to do it. How's it going?
Well, it's been a fantastic playoffs to watch, and once you get over the Timberwolves being out of the playoffs, it's just fun to sit back and watch some really great teams, some really surprising performances. I don't think anybody could have said confidently that the Cavaliers and Celtics, with the problems they had going into these series against the 76ers and the Toronto Raptors, would be up 3-0 in both of their respective series in the Eastern Conference. But that's exactly where they sit, and the Cavaliers, on the heroics of LeBron James, just like they've been doing all season long, have ridden his production to a 3-0 lead over the Toronto Raptors. Most notably, that off the glass, just the kiss off the glass from the top corner on the backboard, to win the game with 8 seconds left, he takes it down the court and offers up that floater, that long floater over OG Anunoby. LeBron James doing everything in this series, doing everything in the playoffs for his team. It's been so impressive. As somebody who covers the team daily, what's it been like kind of just riding this wave of LeBron and knowing that he's got an inconsistent supporting cast, but it doesn't seem to matter against the team that is the number one seed in the Eastern Conference? What is your reaction to LeBron going up 3-0 and in such dramatic fashion?
He's been spectacular. And he hasn't even, I would say, in some ways, hasn't even been as good as he was for most of the Indiana series against Toronto. I mean, he's shooting like under 30% from three right now, where he shot the three ball really well against Indiana. So he's been remarkable. He's done everything that he's been to. It's at a higher level than he was in the regular season, where he played all 82 games for the first time and was just getting close to averaging a triple-double. He's been awesome, and there's just no team that has an answer for him now. You can look at some things like Kevin Love playing better and George Hill's health as being as other reasons why the Cavs are up 3-0 right now, but it's him. He's just playing at this level, and there's no team that has had an answer for him so far. It's Toronto for all their regular season success. I just think when you watch the series, it's clearly just don't have an answer for LeBron, and that's really the biggest deciding factor in the East.
Yeah, you mentioned his scoring 34.8 points per game for LeBron in the playoffs. He's leading all playoff participants in scoring. He's been fantastic. You look at the two games he's had, he's been a monster. That first game, he did have the triple-double, had 26 points, and he said it was one of his worst performances against Toronto after the game. If you're looking at that game, even though a triple-double in the playoffs is still really great, by LeBron's standards, he's saying he's playing poorly. And going into the next game, are you worried at all about OG Anunoby, and what have the Cavaliers done to kind of neutralize a rookie who has been pretty solid on defense, especially against bigger guys like LeBron James throughout the regular season?
You know, I don't think it's as much about what the Cavs have done as much as what Toronto has decided to do. If you go back and watch the film, and there's a really good piece of it for the Sword today by Jeff Siegel about this. Toronto's been switching a lot. So the Cavs are getting switches where it's CJ Miles and smaller guys on LeBron. It's something I thought they might try to do and attack Kyle Lowry at the start of the series, but it's really been hunting down CJ Miles and hunting down the weaker guys on the perimeter that can't battle LeBron inside, and then he's getting these easy post-ups inside and getting these easy looks. OG is about as good of an option as Toronto has. I think, you know, Siakam can do a decent job as well. But once you get past those two guys and you get into LeBron hunting down DeRozan, hunting down CJ Miles and some of these other guys inside, it's just there's no shot. And when that happens, there's other mismatches on the floor. LeBron's just going to have an easier time seeing the floor as a whole. But it's something that I wonder as you look at what Boston might do, what other teams might do in the non-Golden State category. I wonder if the non-success Toronto's head was switching on to LeBron and going looking more at what Indiana did, which is just really being physical with LeBron. Even though he had a great series, Bogdanovich really made him work. I wonder if that's the strategy we see other teams take if they don't have someone that can just match up with LeBron and then feel good about it.
Well, as the Pacers really cared about anybody but the Cavaliers getting to the finals for the Eastern Conference, I think the move is just to let Toronto have Lance Stephenson, the guy who just traditionally gives LeBron, for whatever reason, problems and somehow gets into his head. He's like one of three players ever who has gotten into LeBron's head successfully in the playoffs. And they should have just gifted him to the Toronto Raptors to give them a shot in this series, I think, because that's probably the only way that you slow LeBron down against the Raptors is getting a new guy. Because right now he is so confident and he had no trouble just chewing up everybody on the Toronto team.
Yeah, you know, and it's with Lance, LeBron also had a lot of success against him, though, just because there's just this big size disadvantage. And one of the things I noticed last round, maybe for the first time, and I've probably seen it before, but there was just this big gap he was giving up to LeBron where he definitely annoyed him, definitely as someone who pesters him, but there also was this big size disadvantage. And as annoying as he was, you also just saw him have to give up a lot of space to LeBron to just be able to absorb the contact that was coming his way.
And then before, I wanted to get to a little bit of what you think for the rest of the series and what you think of possibly the Boston Celtics, the team that looks like they're going to play LeBron James in the next round. But before we get to all that, I know this is a tired subject and a lot of people talk about it. I'm going to try and approach it a different way. Kevin Love, I wanted to tackle some of this. I'm not going to ask why he played poorly against the Pacers for stretches. He looked poor in the first game against the Toronto Raptors with 7 points. But they've seemed over the last couple of games in the game two he had the 31 points and in the last game he had the 21 points. If you're looking at Toronto or if you're looking at Kevin Love and how they have played him in offense the last couple of games, is that something that they can sustain throughout the rest of the playoffs, or was that just a moment and a flash for Kevin Love?
I think it's sustainable. I think post-ups obviously are not the most modern thing in this NBA, but he is converting them at a pretty good clip now that he looks like he's using that left hand, that hand that he did hurt in the first round. It seems like that is less of a concern than maybe we had speculated it to be. And he looks more in a rhythm. He's hanging against guys that aren't as physical with him. I think one of the big reasons he's been better, you know, is that he's not being guarded by Thad Young, who was very physical with him, was stronger than him inside. When Kevin Love has that strength advantage, or he's a little bit quicker than some of these guys, and he's taking advantage of getting guarded by guys like DeRozan inside, he feasts. I think, you know, if he switches against Boston, when we get there, I think that's going to be a series where he should continue to have a lot of success. He's also had a lot of success against Al Horford, who's been great this year, but Kevin has a track record of having success against Al Horford in the playoffs. You know, Golden State and Houston are obviously trickier series for him, I think, just the speed of both those teams, and we know what Draymond can do to him if they're both playing the five spot. But I think for at least the rest of this series, if it's one game, two games, whatever, and then the assumed Boston series, I think Kevin should be in a really good position to keep playing at this level. He obviously, to quote LeBron, is a big part of their success and their non-success. And when he's playing like this, it takes burden off LeBron and it pushes the team to this other level and just makes them a little bit harder to defend.
If you're looking at going forward too, maybe that there's a way that the Boston Celtics can kind of take advantage of muscling him in the post again, like you're talking about how the Pacers did, and take that a little bit away from the Cavaliers and Love. If you're looking at you haven't really gotten a huge injection, or you haven't really gotten a ton of production from guys like Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, guys on that second unit who you were hoping you know you can't depend on them shooting wise all the time, but you're hoping that they can come in every maybe fourth game and have a really good game. If you put Kevin Love and play him a little more with that second unit so he gets a chance to shoot more from the elbow, which was kind of his shot in Minnesota, and which LeBron takes a lot of those shots, which has kind of neutralized him taking those shots with the Cavaliers. If you put him in the lineup with Hood and with Clarkson more, do you think that opens him up not only for more shots from that comfort spot on the elbow, but it also helps those players kind of find a rhythm with a Kevin Love that is scoring more with that second unit?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I think if you look at the end of Game 3, there was a stretch in the second half where he really did work out of the elbow. He's obviously not – he's a different guy than he was with the Wolves, but I think if you look in that situation where they were running things through him, it allows George Hill to do different stuff, and George Hill's been hugely important as well. I think you have to keep going to that. I think it's something that we wanted the Cavs to do. I think I've at least wanted them to do. I think it's not always going to be a part of their repertoire, but – I think it's the smart thing for him to go ahead and do that. And if for Ty Lue, it does take some of the burden off LeBron. You've seen a couple instances in the playoffs so far where buckets from Kevin Love have allowed LeBron to sit for just a little bit longer. That is going to keep mattering going forward. If you can get LeBron a little bit of rest and get him an extra 3 minutes on the bench and then maybe pair with a timeout and slow that pace down by playing through Love at the elbow, it's only going to make the Cavs better.
Yeah, and this is a guy who's been playing for 15 seasons. He's got 15 seasons of wear and tear, and a vast majority of those times he's going very deep into the playoffs. So a lot of wear and tear on him, and so the extra minutes really do add up that he's on the bench and that he can rest, especially when you're attempting to make a deep run like the Cavs are again this season. We're going to take a quick break for some sponsors before we get back to the conversation of the Eastern Conference, specifically the Cleveland Cavaliers with Chris Manning. Chris Manning joining the show. He is the host of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. He's also the manager of the Fear the Sword site, which is the SB Nation website dedicated to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He knows the ins and outs of the team. He's covering them daily. And so he's giving us a great inside look at the Cavaliers and what we can expect from them, what they've been doing so far, what's worked against the Toronto Raptors. We're just talking about past games. Now let's look a little bit ahead. I mentioned earlier we have Game 4, the chance for the Cavaliers to sweep the Toronto Raptors tonight. Before we get to even if that can happen, how huge would that be for the Cavs if they're able to sweep the Toronto Raptors? We talked about rest for LeBron, getting those extra few days of rest over the Celtics, and obviously they can sweep the 76ers as well, but if the Celtics can go even an extra game more than the Cavaliers, how huge is that just rest-wise for LeBron James?
You know, it's massive. If you look at what they had to do in the first round, it was go seven games. It was set up themselves to play a series where they were only going to get one day off in between games. That's on them for not finishing that series early. LeBron was openly kind of annoyed about that. And if he can get however many days off it is, well, I think the earliest they would play is sometime this upcoming weekend, be it Friday or Sunday or something like that, depending on when Boston and them finish up. It gets him extra time, and that's a nightmare for opposing teams. It gets him a chance to be fresh. It gets him a chance to do some of the rehab that he's taken the time to do in between games. But in addition to LeBron, it gives Kevin Love time to rest, considering they're having him play a bunch of minutes. It gives George Hill, who was dealing with a back injury in the first round and looks good now, but is still playing probably through some kind of back issue, it gives him some rest as well. And these are guys like Kyle Korver, who's had a foot issue for a year. It gives J.R. Smith, who's been taxed a lot this series, some rest. It gives all these guys extra time, and it obviously starts with LeBron. But it trickles down, I think, to everyone that this is an older team. It's the oldest team in the playoffs, and that's obviously a little skewed because the Kendrick Perkins age addition pushes them up a little bit when they added him at the last of the regular season. But this is an older team, and it has guys that have been through this before. But the guys that they're counting on right now are LeBron, obviously Kevin Love, Kyle Korver, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith. They go to George Hill. You know, Hill doesn't have that same length of runs, but all those other guys have been to the finals before. Kyle just the one time, but the other guys have been there three times in a row. This is a group that has miles on them, and they're going to benefit from some rest more so than maybe any other team besides Golden State in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a huge factor. And so when you're looking at this game, I know that a game four, when you're down 0-3, desperation just to stay in the playoffs for Toronto and make a series of it. But I think is it fair to say there's just as much incentive on the Cleveland side of things to get this series wrapped up as there is incentive on Toronto's side of things to keep this series extended?
I mean, I think there is. I think for the Cavs, any rest is good. I think obviously Toronto doesn't want its series to be season to be defined by being swept by the Cavs. I think there's got to be some incentive on their part to come out blazing and go after the Cavs hard in Game Four. I think for the Cavs, if the earlier you can get this done, it's the better for them. You know, maybe Philly picks up Game Four and avoids being swept, and maybe that's. I mean, I don't think they're too worried about Boston, but I think if anytime you get a little bit of an advantage there, I think there's incentive to wrap it up, and I think they would like to get that rest. And I also think for Ty Lue, as the guy who's dealing with health concerns, maybe some time off would do him some good. And he's also a guy who does have, I think, his best coaching moments when he has time to game plan and has time in between series to make adjustments. And maybe some time off for him would do him well in two ways.
If you're looking at the Toronto Raptors, obviously there's that stigma of there's a curse for Toronto against Cleveland, and specifically against LeBron, and how they can't really get over the hump against him, how it doesn't matter what they do in the regular season, but they can't pass this mile mark of beating LeBron. How detrimental has this series been to kind of adding to that narrative for the Raptors? You have the overtime loss in Game 1, where you have a couple things rim out and they're just not able to get some putbacks to go their way. And then in Game 3, you have the last second. In the last 8 seconds, LeBron drives down the court and is able to get the floater to go to win the game. As far as just you watching these games and watching the body language of Toronto, how much more has this killed their psyche? Just another series that hasn't gone their way, and gone their way in so many different aspects despite a regular season that has been so favorable for them. And how does that kind of play into Game 4?
You know, I don't know how it plays into Game 4 necessarily. I think it's a team that's obviously going to come out really hard, try to play hard. I think they have to, I think, try to get at least one game if they're going to feel better about everything that's going on. But you know, I think it speaks to just the dominance LeBron has more than anything. I think this is the guy that has the stranglehold in the East. Toronto is maybe goes down as this version, the Pacers to the Heat. Maybe they're to the Cavs in terms of they're always there competing, but just are never quite good enough. And they obviously have not been as competitive as the Pacers were able to be with the Heat. But the Cavs just have that domination over them, and they've dominated the East. And I certainly thought they had a really good shot of beating the Cavs. I picked the Cavs, but didn't feel great about it. I certainly look dumb now and look forward to it. It's maybe time to think, you know, maybe this isn't the team that's going to be LeBron. I think you look at moving forward more than anything. I think you look at Philly, if they develop right, Boston with getting Hayward back, the potential to add other major pieces. Those two teams to me look like the teams that are more likely to end LeBron's reign in the East, assuming he sticks around in the East or doesn't join one of them. But I think Toronto, this maybe is just a sign that it isn't in Toronto's cards to be the team that's going to take down LeBron in the East, even when they've had this great season and reinvented their style of play to handle LeBron.
It's just a little disappointing if you were kind of pulling for Toronto to have guys like Kyle Lowry and DeRozan that are so good, and they still don't have a guy on this roster that really feels like they can that they are coming out of the locker room saying, I'm going to go toe-to-toe with LeBron tonight. They just don't have that guy.
Yeah, I mean, you look at teams that have beat LeBron, they have guys that can just match LeBron in some way or just overwhelm them. Look at Golden State, they just are able to overwhelm LeBron in a lot of ways. So I think that ends up being what you need to beat a LeBron team. You just need that plethora of guys and just be a great team. That it ends up being, even if the Cavs aren't great, LeBron can elevate them to another level, and you need a way to counter that.
Last thing before we head out here, both series could very well end tonight. The Boston Celtics and Cleveland Cavaliers both up 3-0 and are going to play tonight, and both just playing so well that these could be over tonight. And so the Eastern Conference could be already in Eastern Conference Finals mode by the end of the night. If that happens, and if everything goes chalk, and it's going to be the Cavaliers and the Celtics in the Finals again, does it worry you that the Boston Celtics have been able to game plan so well for guys like, I know that they're not on the same level as LeBron, but Antetokounmpo, Ben Simmons, both really great guys, the key linchpins to both of those teams respectively. And does it worry that they're able to game plan so well around those guys despite the losses of guys like Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart for portions of that series? You have Gordon Hayward out. They're still able to game plan for these great players. Do you think that there's a way they can do the same thing for LeBron and kind of force the supporting cast around him to be the primary thing that wins these games? Or is there no way to really game plan for LeBron because he's on that another level of greatness?
Yeah, you know, I think Brad Stevens obviously going to come up with a great game plan to counter LeBron and see what they decide to do. They're a team that I think one of the things Toronto's done that gives the Cavs a preview of what Boston will do is all the switching. We also, he'll probably alter that starting lineup if Kevin Love, you know, stays at the five, because Aaron Baines, it doesn't really seem like an ideal fit if Al Horford is at the four guarding LeBron in that series, I think. But I'm not too worried about it because they don't have anyone that is equipped to defend LeBron right now. I think Jalen could get there. I think Marcus Smart will do, kind of like what Lance does, but I think, I just don't think there's the counter there. I think though how they defend Kevin will be pretty interesting, how they defend George Hill and how the Cavs can defend some of the movement and the action they've kind of really relied on so far in the playoffs, how they handle that length will also be pretty interesting. I think the Cavs still should be big favorites in that series, but I think there are things Boston can do that can at least push them. But I think a lot of the advantage for them will be Brad Stevens, because he will come up with a really good game plan, and how the Cavs counteract that, and how much of it is LeBron just being LeBron will be kind of an interesting wrinkle to that series.
It's been Chris Manning on this morning talking Cavaliers, talking LeBron James. Before we head out here, Chris, you are on the Locked On. You host the Locked On Cavaliers show. You are the managing editor for the Fear the Sword site for SB Nation, covering all things Cleveland Cavaliers. Is there any content that we should be specifically aware of going into Game 4 of the Cleveland Cavaliers-Toronto Raptors series on either one of those sites?
Yeah, if you want a Game 4 podcast preview and some talk about LeBron game winners, today's Locked On Cavs episode has you covered there with Mike Zavgano. You can check that out. And then Fear the Sword will have you, everything you want to know about tonight's Game 4 will have you covered pre- and post-game. I mentioned it before, but Jeff Siegel has a really, really good post up about how Toronto has switched against the Cavs so far, and I think it offers an insight into what Boston might do as well. So check out that piece and check out everything we're doing over there.
Fantastic. Make sure you get all that good content to get fully prepared for tonight's Game 4, Cleveland Cavaliers against the Toronto Raptors. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast,